With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. The Sacramento Summit focuses on water challenges and the water right system. Some 150 water managers, government officials, farmers, environmentalists, and others gathered in Sacramento last week to collaborate on some of the state's most challenging water issues. The Water Education Foundation annual Water Summit came after heavy rains boosted reservoirs in 2023 following 3 years of drought that brought water curtailment orders and called for modernizing of the water rights system. Eric Oppenheimer of the California State Water Resources said the water rights system is, quote, a challenging system to manage and it requires better data collection. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report. And before we get into today's show headlines, I'd like to address something, and it's somewhat of a bittersweet moment for me. Today will be my last day as host of the AgNet News Hour and with the AgNet West team. You guys have been getting agriculture stories from me for the last 5.5 years, but now it's time for me to move on. And I've taken this next step in my life to prioritize my family and stay at home and really be present in the lives of my children and my husband and my immediate family. So I just want to say thank you for being with me for the last 5.5 years. It's truly been an honor to share agriculture news with you all. I am, however, leaving you in great hands with Sabrina Halverson. You've heard her here before. She has a permanent national spotlight with us, and so now she will be the one delivering your daily agriculture news. With that being said, let's get into today's show headlines. California's Advanced Clean Truck Regulation, which was approved back in 2021, takes effect at the beginning of the new year. This rule is part of the California Air Resources Control Board's vision to accelerate a large-scale transition to zero-emission medium and heavy-duty vehicles. This week, ag processing associations and packing companies met at the Port of Oakland to discuss several issues, including the impact of the ACF rule, as well as the indirect source review rule in the South Coast Air Quality Management District. The roundtable discussion included representatives from the Port of Oakland, the Pacific Merchant Shipping Association, the International Longshore Warehouse Union, SSA Marine, TRAPAC, GSC Logistics, TGS Logistics, the Nisei Farmers League, and the American Pistachio Growers. Western Agricultural Processors Association President and CEO Roger Isom was in attendance. He says, quote, this was an important meeting to bring affected parties together. The outcome was a commitment to work as a coalition on these critical regulations that will have a profound impact on all of us. The group plans to continue the discussion at a follow-up meeting later this month. And now here's AgNet West's Brian German with more agriculture news.
International trade programs are vital for U.S. agriculture. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack explains how USDA supports ag trade efforts.
It is clear to us the key to trade promotion and to trade opportunities involves making sure that we continue to support a people in country who are representing and working for the United States and United States agriculture to promote our goods and products. It's important that we continue to have a presence in those key agricultural market areas. It's important for us to continue to do the trade missions, which we've done on an expanded basis in a number of traditional, but also in a number of non-traditional market opportunities to continue the diversification effort. It's also critically important that we continue to provide resources for promotions, working with our cooperator groups across the world to make sure that customers and countries across the world are aware of the quality, the quantity, the safety, and the affordability of American agricultural exports.
It's been a wild ride for almond growers this year dealing with pest and disease pressures. BASF Tech Service Rep for the Southern San Joaquin Valley, Kevin Caffrey, said there's been a significant amount of damage related to abnormal weather this year.
It was coming close to hull split. They were planning their NOW sprays. They were getting ready to finish out. And then some areas got a late rain. So there were nuts on the ground during that. There were nuts in the trees. Hull rot popped up out of nowhere. You could drive by and see trees with 50% strikes, just dead branches from how much hull rot came in. And then the nuts started coming off in the almonds and, unsurprisingly, tons of NOW injury. Higher than usual ant injury, partly because some people were cutting out some of their ant spreads. So, I mean, it went anywhere from still single digits for injury, which isn't great, but that's what you want to see, especially under 2%. It was more common around 5 or 6, and as wild as it sounds, I'm hearing reports from up north, 30 to 50% in some fields. That's nearly a complete loss if you're losing 30 to 50% of your crop to injury. So it has been quite the wild ride, and I think a lot of people have kind of had to recalibrate themselves to proper IPM strategies, proper timings, proper application, and everything else that comes about from that. So yeah, just almonds alone with how the weather worked out has just been wild. And to be honest, there's still almonds in the tree. People are still harvesting today, and it's November already.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, President Biden last week highlighted his administration's investments in rural America at Robert Clover's Farm near Northfield, Minnesota, which is about a half an hour south of the Minneapolis area. The Clover Farm grows corn and soybeans and raises hogs. Third-generation farmer Brad Clover introduced the president on behalf of the family.
With every new crop season and with every new group of animals through our barn, I always feel a sense of hope and optimism for what the future can bring. I feel the same excitement and joy when I look at my two young children, and I know that their future is bright because of the work President Biden has started by reinvesting in rural America. And because of that, I am beyond honored to welcome and introduce President Joe Biden.
The president gave a brief update on the Israel-Hamas situation before his comments on rural America, and then he thanked Clover for the introduction.
Brad said he wasn't sure what a good speaker was. He can speak a hell of a lot better than I can farm.
Biden talked about the competition in the livestock industry, how the Clovers have been affected by a lack of competition.
For too long, farmers like Brad and his brother and his dad, mom, have had to sell their hogs, not just a handful of meat processors. There's only a handful that existed. Outsized control over the industry, and they set the prices as well. Let me put this in perspective to you. Just four big corporations control more than half the market in beef, pork, and poultry. And because so few companies control so much of the market, if one of those processing plants goes offline, it can cause massive supply chain disruptions, slowing production, and cost farmers big. It happened to Brad. When processing plants shut down during the pandemic, and he had to rely on social media to sell his hogs.
When Biden took office, the administration invested $1 billion from the American Rescue Plan to expand the capacity of small and medium-sized meat processors. During his comments, President Biden emphasized the administration's new investments from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act to advance rural prosperity, economic development, competition, and sustainability.
Over the past few decades, these communities lost more than jobs. They lost their sense of dignity, opportunity, pride. My plan is about investing in rural America. It's about something else as well. It's about restoring pride in the rural to rural communities that have been left behind for far too long. No, they really have. It's not hyperbole.
The event kicked off a series of scheduled appearances by cabinet members in several rural states over the next 2 weeks. In other ag news, areas of drought around the nation are shrinking as they do this time of year. Here's USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey with a look at notable changes.
during the month of October, we saw a significant improvement in the Northwest, the Midwest, and the Great Plains. But we did see flash-type drought, very quick developing and very quickly intensifying drought in parts of the Southeast. We also saw some drought intensification in some of the Southwestern states. Other states with pretty significant totals of extreme to exceptional drought on October 31st includes Tennessee at 41%, New Mexico coming in at 37%, and then also above the 20% mark, we have Alabama, 29% D3 to D4. And as we move to the Midwest, we do see some lingering drought. Iowa is still covered 24% by extreme to exceptional drought.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, the 2024 fiscal year for the Cattlemen's Beef Board started October 1st, and throughout the year, they will be investing approximately $38 million into programs of beef promotion, research, consumer information, industry information, foreign marketing, and producer communications. Back in September, the Beef Promotion Operating Committee did approve the checkoff funding for a total of 12 authorization requests or grant proposals for the year. 9 contractors and 3 subcontractors brought 15 authorization requests worth approximately $49 million to the committee. That was some $11 million more than the CBB budget would allow. Jimmy Taylor, CBB and committee chair, said our budget amounts to slightly less each year because of inflation. To put it in perspective, a dollar in 1985 is worth just 35 cents today. That means we simply don't have the buying power that we had when this program first started. So 8 proposals were accepted, and the funding includes $9,275,000 for promotion programs. That includes beef and veal campaigns focusing on beef's nutritional value, eating experience, convenience, and production. $8,300,000 will go towards research programs that will focus on pre- and post-harvest beef safety, scientific affairs, nutrition, sustainability, product quality, culinary technical expertise, and consumer perceptions. $7.6 million will be used for consumer information programs. That includes a variety of influencer outreach and public relation initiatives, national consumer public relations, including nutrition influencer relations, and work with primary and secondary school curriculum directors nationwide to get accurate information about the beef industry in classrooms of today's youth. $2.8 million will be used for industry information programs. That includes dissemination of accurate information about the beef industry to counter any misinformation from other groups, as well as funding for checkoff participation in the annual National Industry-Wide Symposium for Antibiotic Use. Also, $8.1 million will be used for foreign marketing and education. That'll focus on 13 regions representing more than 90 countries around the world. And $1.8 million will be used for producer communications. That includes investor outreach using national communications and direct communications to producers and importers about checkoff results. Elements of this program include ongoing producer listening and analysis, industry collaboration and outreach, along with continued development of publishing strategy and platform of State Beef Council Content Hub. If you'd like more information about the Beef Checkoff and its programs and 2024 spending, including promotion, research, and more, just simply visit drivingdemandforbeef.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The Agriculture Secretary speaks to young ag leaders. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack spoke to students, agricultural educators, and guests at the opening session of the 96th National FFA Convention and Expo during Thursday's opening session. He also signed a memorandum of understanding with the organization formalizing a partnership to prepare more students for careers in food, agricultural science, natural resources, and related fields. He shared USDA's vision to secure the future of American agriculture and opportunities for the next generation of agricultural leaders. He emphasized the importance of ensuring that farms of all sizes have the opportunity to succeed. Scott Stump, CEO of the National FFA organization, says, "At National FFA, we're preparing our students to be tomorrow's leaders in agriculture." He says, "We appreciate the Secretary's dedication to agricultural education and FFA, which is why we were honored to present him with an honorary American FFA degree." I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And before we get into more agriculture news, I do want to remind you about the 6th Annual Organic Grower Summit presented by Western Growers and the Organic Produce Network. It's going to be held this year on November 29th through the 30th, so just a few weeks away at the Hyatt Regency Monterey Hotel and Spa in Monterey. Now, if you've never been to the OGS before, it is designed to provide information vital to organic growers and producers, including an overview of the opportunities and challenges in the production of organic fresh food. Registration is currently open, and if you'd like to find out more information, you can visit organicgrowersummit.com. And now for more agriculture news.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. Over the past year or so, many fraudulent employee retention credit claims have been filed. It's gotten so bad that the IRS stopped processing claims for the fourth quarter of 2023. Many farming operations likely didn't qualify for the ERC, but may have submitted a claim. Now, IRS has provided a path for those that want to withdraw their claim. You've probably heard about the ads about the Employee Retention Credit, or ERC. Many firms are pushing the credit, and there's been a high volume of fraudulent claims filed with the IRS. In fact, things have gotten so bad that the IRS announced that it would stop processing ERC claims for the fourth quarter of 2023. Many farmers won't qualify because they didn't see at least a 20% reduction in gross receipts on an aggregated basis. Now, IRS has provided a path for withdrawing an ERC claim if you think you made an invalid claim. A withdrawal is possible for those that filed a claim but haven't received notice that the claim is under audit. Just file Form 943 and write withdrawn on the left-hand margin. Make sure to sign and date the form before sending it to the IRS. If your claim is under audit, provide the form directly to the auditor. If you received a refund but haven't cashed it, write void and ERC withdrawal and send it back to the IRS. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
El Nino, the predominant theme within the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's winter weather outlook for this upcoming season. Translated, that usually means mild and drier weather in the nation's northern half and wetter and cloudier conditions in the southern tier of the country. However, what are the potential impacts of El Nino on agriculture during the winter months? USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey starts with Western water supplies for irrigation, where water storage was boosted by last winter's significant precipitation accumulation. However,
some of the biggest reservoirs, especially those in the Colorado River Basin and in the Rio Grande, remain critically low following a generation of drought going back 20 to 25 years or more.
And El Nino could lead to drier than normal conditions in parts of the Pacific Northwest.
We'll have to keep an eye on the Columbia River Basin and some of the smaller waterways in the Northwest for potential signs of developing drought or intensifying drought.
El Nino also usually has favorable impacts on winter wheat.
We do sometimes see warmer and drier than normal conditions in the northern production areas, especially, say, Montana and into South Dakota. However, without the significant cold outbreaks that sometimes come with winter, that often helps the winter wheat health, even in the absence of significant snowfall.
While in the southern plains wheat belt,
El Nino often leads to a wetter than normal winter, and that is typically positive for winter wheat outcomes. And so overall, the El Nino prospect for winter wheat tends to be favorable for the United States.
Regarding livestock,
the warmer and drier conditions across the north tend to be a positive.
Yet Rippey reminds us that despite the overall conditions of El Nino, there are weather system anomalies, such as recent Northern Plains snowstorms.
So it doesn't mean a clean pass with warm, dry conditions, but it does mean that if you look at the overall cold season as a whole, it tends to be a little bit easier than normal across the north.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Soybeans closed higher for the fourth week in a row last week and are testing heavy resistance to start this first full week of November. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report brought to you by AgroLiquid and Kloss Equipment. Discover the entire lineup of combines, forage harvesters, tractors, balers, and hay tools from Kloss. Visit Kloss.com. Well, after four higher weekly closes in a row, January soybeans start this week heavy resistance after reaching above 1350 on Friday. That's the highest since September 18th. 1375 3/4 would be next. Now, besides weather in Brazil, a major German publication says there's a global shortage of vegetable oil and will only get worse in 2024. And China's recent interest in U.S. beans has the attention of traders, but most say that's only a hedge against a short crop in South America and they can cancel later. Be sure your crop nutrition plan is ready to go next spring with Pro Germinator from AgroLiquid. Visit agroliquid.com to learn more. This is the Bottom Line Report. We congratulate FFA members and teams winning awards at the annual convention in Indianapolis last week and to the new national officer team. The future of agriculture is in good hands. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day and a profitable week ahead.
Low water levels on the Mississippi River have slowed barge traffic and reduced loading capacity this harvest season, leading to similar delays and increased costs experienced by the grain industry last year. Ben Doan, manager of barge freight at CHS Global Grain and Processing, says the industry was taken by surprise last year.
There were overloaded barges loaded to 10 to 11 feet that physically just could not transit. So as a result of those hundreds of barges getting left behind, we were congesting fleets at really the worst part of the year.
He says the barge traffic was shut down entirely during the harvest for 2 weeks last year due to low water levels. In response, the Army Corps of Engineers this past summer undertook several dredging operations to avoid a similar situation this harvest season.
And that's exactly what happened. 2023, fast forward the clock to this past September, October, and lightning struck twice, but the industry was just a lot more well-prepped.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
Norbrook is introducing Toramox, the first generic Cydectin, a moxidectin injectable dewormer created for the treatment of infections and infestations due to internal and external parasites in beef and non-lactating dairy cattle. Dr. Eric Moore, Norbrook Director of Technical Services, explains.
It is the first generic moxidectin to Cydectin injectable. It is a 1% moxidectin injectable for treating infections and infestations due to internal and external parasites in beef and non-lactating dairy cattle. Toramox treats and controls gastrointestinal roundworms, lungworms, cattle grubs, mites, and lice. Toramox effectively protects cattle from reinfestation of key internal parasites in that it has a duration of activity to keep those parasites from coming back right away, which is important to those cattle out on pasture.
Dr. Moore says Toramox injectable solution is the same as Cydectin injectable solution.
Our generic is an identical bioequivalent to the Cydectin injectable product on the market today. One benefit of an injectable dewormer is a consistency of dose. So when we have an injectable dewormer, we know we're getting the full dose in there based on the dosing on the label. Being a bioequivalent generic, it'll provide the same benefits as the Pioneer product does.
Being a generic, it provides the same benefits at a lower cost.
If you look at a generic product like Toramox, they can have the same effective weight gain as a benefit from using the product and eliminating those parasites. They also get all the same benefits of the Pioneer product, but more cost-effective package. So what we're trying to do as a generic manufacturer is provide a product at a more cost-effective price point that does the same thing as the Pioneer product, allowing you to reap the benefits at a lower price point.
Head online or talk to your herd veterinarian to learn more.
You can always learn more by contacting norbrook.com. But first, it's always important to consult your herd health professional. Talk to your veterinarian, talk to your animal health supplier. Find out what works in your area and be sure and match your products to the parasites that you have.
Again, visit Norbrook online at norbrook.com. Michael Clements reporting.
You might think this is another case of putting the Christmas holiday well ahead of Halloween in the minds of consumers and the public. Yet Janelle Smith of the U.S. Forest Service in Idaho says this is more like a scenario of planning ahead.
For many years, many decades really, the Forest Service has offered Christmas tree permit sales through local offices. And there's just really a push a dozen years ago or so to bring that online.
With that, Christmas tree permits for those wishing to cut their tree in their local or favorite national forest are now available online via recreation.gov.
This is a reservation service that the Forest Service uses already, and so it was kind of no-brainer that we have this trusted system. And so now our program, the recreation.gov, is able to support the Forest Service for all of those forests throughout the country who choose to use it.
There are also Christmas tree permits available at local Forest Service ranger stations or through participating vendors, as well as the online option. Now Smith provides some heads up regarding the cutting of Christmas trees in our nation's forest, starting with...
For each forest that does offer Christmas tree permits, they actually have specific areas where Christmas trees can be cut by folks. It's really with a permit. So when you purchase a permit, oftentimes through rec.gov or even on the local forest webpage, you'll see special cutting areas. And so forest health experts have identified those areas that would really benefit from having some of those smaller diameter trees that actually make a perfect centerpiece for your holiday available to the public. So it's not just a free-for-all that you can go out there and cut any tree anywhere. And all of that information is available when you start going through that permit process.
Now, prior to someone, perhaps yourself, going out to cut down your chosen tree for the holiday season,
there's some really need-to-know information. We actually have heard stories where people actually forgot their saw, the implement to cut it down, and ropes are really helpful. So really getting some of that need-to-know information ahead of time once you're ready to go cut the tree closer to the holidays is super important.
Also, permit holders need to remember to print out their Christmas tree cutting permit and place it on the dashboard of their vehicle the day of their visit to a national forest to cut down their tree. One other note, fourth graders across the U.S. receive every kid's outdoor passes.
And in addition to getting a free holiday tree permit, they actually get access to about 2,000 federally managed locations throughout the country. So if you were to go to a national park that charges an entrance fee, it covers that fee.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For today's interview segment, we have the latest episode from the Vineyard Team's podcast talking all about their upcoming event called the Sustainable Ag Expo. You've heard us promote it here before, and we'll be there at the event happening November 14th through the 15th. Here's a look at what might be presented at this year's expo.
With me today is Cliff Omart. He is a consultant with Omart Consulting in a whole variety of areas. One of the things that he's doing right now is he's helping to organize, or is organizing, the program for the 2023 Sustainable Ag Expo in San Luis Obispo. Coming up, he's going to tell us a little bit about some of the folks and some of the topics that will be there and some things that might be of interest to you. So welcome, Cliff.
Thank you very much, Craig. It's nice to be here with you. And I think this is a great opportunity to have this podcast before the expo so people can get an even better feel than just the website of what's coming.
Absolutely. For those who don't know, what is the Sustainable Ag Expo?
It is a combined presentation slash trade show that the Vineyard team has been putting on, I think, for at least 15 years now.
It's been a while.
It's developed into quite the history. The format is... There's a session in the morning from 8 to 10, a half-hour break for people to go out to the trade show, 10:30 to noon, more presentations. Then there's lunch for people to go to the trade show, then 1 to 3, another half-hour break, and then 3:30 to 5. And there's only one session at a time, so people don't have to worry about missing something. Also, they're free to circulate through the trade show during the presentations if they so choose. This year, the Vineyard team decided to change the format, which I think I'm excited to see how this will go. So this year, it'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, full days, as I just described that schedule. But then Monday evening, it'll be a kickoff. What we're going to be doing for the feature presenter, which is Dr. Terry Bates from Cornell, he and I will be on stage for a period of time, I think half hour to an hour, where we'll be in sort of an interview back and forth situation, give a chance for the see him, ask questions to get ready for the next day. And so I'm excited about that. And then the first session, which will be Tuesday morning from 8 to 10, first Terry Bates will be doing a formal presentation of his work, followed by a panel of Terry Bates, Dr. Andrew Macaron, and Dr. Mason Earls from, Mason is from UC Davis. Andrew works at ARS, Agricultural Research Service, Station in Davis, and their area of expertise is all around detailed data analysis. Andrew, especially on water relations, particularly in vineyards. Mason Earls, more along remote sensing, things like that. And the focus of Terry's talk, as well as the night before, is on precision viticulture. He, along with a big team of people, developed something called the Efficient Vineyard. And it's very impressive, in part because the software is available for anybody for free. And it's anywhere from, it can capture as the website, there's a really nice website for, you can use your phone to capture gopher holes, the location of gopher holes, broken posts, right up to very advanced remote sensing that you can import into the software so it's all in one spot. I'm excited about this because I think you've probably seen the same thing. There's so much technology out there, and it's very exciting. But I think especially for the small to mid-sized grower, there's a concern about, do I have the time to do this? Do I have the ability to do this? What's this all about? Whereas a bigger grower can hire somebody to check it out. And I think the session Monday night and Tuesday morning is going to be focused on what's the reality here? What can growers do with it? And then from the researcher's perspective, which is Andrew Macaron and Mason Earls, they want to see people applying their work. And so what is that? That's really what I'm hoping to get out of that session.
Yeah, I have interviewed Terry Bates, and I've also communicated with him off and on over the years. And his area of specialization is proximity sensing. So some of the high-tech stuff they do has to do with like yield monitors and harvesters and different types of EC sleds and stuff like that. But he also is very much about making a map. And you can do it. One of his messages to me, almost every time I talk to him, is like, people can do this. You can do it. You don't need to go too crazy. The most important thing is do it. And so I'm really excited to see him there and talk about the more advanced technological stuff. But also, I imagine he'll be encouraging people to follow this concept. I think it's really, really fascinating. And the things that they find out is fascinating, too.
I agree.
Then there's a lot of stuff also that's out there that's available that you don't have to invest in. There's information that's out there.
Yeah, that's what I think, especially for us on the West Coast. You know, Cornell is a powerhouse, as you know. And I think West Coast people, some people probably know that, others don't. And there's more and more things to tap into on both coasts. as well as the middle. So one fun thing too for me is the moderator for the after Terry's talk, the session with Terry, Mason, and Andrew is going to be moderated by Donnell Brown, who is the executive director of the National Grape Research Alliance. And one of the things that's neat about it is I don't have to moderate. She's going to do it. But then the other thing is the National Grape Research Alliance has been instrumental in bringing researchers together from around the U.S. in viticulture and enology and creating a goal-oriented team to go pursue money to do various things like develop the Efficient Vineyard Project. So she's going to be the moderator. So she knows these people well. So that'll be fun. My only regret is I know there won't be enough time to really get into what we'd like as much, but there'll be afterwards for people to talk to the speakers on the side.
And that is one of the really great things about the expo is the speakers. Well, I guess full disclosure, years ago, I worked for Vineyard Team and the position was technical program manager. And I was responsible for putting together programming for the expo and whatnot. Everybody that I ever recruited was super happy to stick around and talk to growers. That was like the high point for them. And this is an opportunity where you get to do that. And they take questions during the session, but sometimes people, there's not time or they didn't want to ask. And then they have an opportunity to actually interact with the scientists themselves. And that's just a fantastic opportunity because a lot of conferences and meetings, you can go and you don't really have the opportunity to talk to the experts afterwards. And it's much more informal. It's very much also grower to grower. I think one of the things that's great about the expo is there's a lot of conversation after the sessions between people along the lines of, yeah, we tried this, or we're thinking about trying this, or what do you think about it? You know, and that's just super invaluable, I think.
I don't want to forget, I don't think we will, but another change in format is this year, instead of the third day of presentations, we're going to be recording 10 or so virtual recordings that will be available from October 16th to November 30th to the attendees of the expo. And we'll touch on a couple of those. I'm sure the Vineyard Team website will have a nice list of presenters at the in-person expo and virtual as well, so people can see. But I think we're going to touch on a couple of those, you and I, in this podcast, but I wanted to bring that out as well.
Let's go right into that, first of all, because that is a change for Expo, but I think it's also a change kind of in our modern world. So this is the idea of making content available to those who have bought tickets, essentially, right? So it's another day of the Expo, but they can view it at any time during that window.
Yes.
So that gives them some schedule flexibility, which is pretty cool. Who are some of the folks that are going to be in these virtual sessions?
There's a really interesting, I think, half hour to 45 minute talk by a fellow named Michael Miller, who is the California Association of Wine Grape Growers Director of Government Relations. And he is doing a presentation on the laws and regulations related to using robotics, particularly driverless tractors in the vineyard, which probably does not surprise you. The technology is ahead of the laws and regulations. So there are driverless tractors now available, and yet the laws and regulations around, you know, through OSHA are you have to have a driver on the tractor at all times. Very interested to hear that presentation about what's coming, who's doing the work to try to change those laws, what might the changes look like.
This was just a portion of that podcast. Get the full episode, visit vineyardteam.org. Stay tuned, we'll have more ag news after the break.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. The U.S. had a recent agricultural trade mission to Southeast Asia. We'll find out why trade missions are not just for selling, but also for learning. California Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross was on a recent trade mission to Southeast Asia. She told reporters that these missions are not just for making new rules, but also for learning about the market.
The quality of the meetings were outstanding for all of our people, and that's what I always take back with me. But for me, it was sitting in the sessions that were arranged to better understand from food manufacturers, as well as trade associations here, the importers, the retailers, the importance of showing up, of building the relationship, and to be committed, that we have to start small and grow. And I think our companies are ready to do that, but they want to know that we're going to be here for the long term. And I really appreciate that.
UC Davis, in collaboration with the Citrus Research Board, are seeking participation for a brief survey aimed at collecting crucial data for a comprehensive life cycle analysis of California's citrus industry. The goal of the project is to quantify the environmental impacts and benefits of citrus production, covering everything from water and electricity usage to grove management practices and fertilizer applications. This analysis spans the years 2021 to 2023, addressing questions raised by major retailers about the sustainability efforts of the California citrus industry. Results of the survey will be aggregated and presented only on a countywide or statewide basis, with no identifying information to be made public. The collected information will be accessible exclusively to researchers at UC Davis and CRB staff directly involved in the project. The survey, designed in two parts, offers participants a choice. The first part, a 10 to 15 minute summary of the entire orchard, provides an industry-wide perspective. The optional second part, a more detailed block-by-block survey, takes about 30 to 45 minutes, but allows for a personalized case study report on an orchard's environmental performance and footprints. If a grower does opt in to the more detailed section, UC Davis is offering assistance. A link to the survey can be found at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
The legislation to study the barriers to mental health. Senators Michael Bennett and Cynthia Loomis of Wyoming introduced legislation requiring the Government Accountability Office to study the barriers between farmers and ranchers and mental health care. Bennett says, quote, "Our farmers and ranchers face uncertainty from forces beyond their control, and Congress needs to do more to help them access mental and behavioral health care they need. Volatile commodity prices, increased input costs, more frequent wildfires, severe drought, and other extreme weather events significantly affect farmers and ranchers' mental health. Despite the demonstrated need for services, many rural communities face barriers to access those services. The GAO would be required to study the availability and accessibility of substance abuse treatments and mental health care providers trained to serve the needs of farmers, ranchers, agricultural workers, and their families. The study would also assess the barriers farmers and ranchers face to accessing care and successful programs at state and local levels." NAFB contributed to that report. Signing off for Agnet West Radio Network, I'm Danielle Leal.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.